identity for as long as I can remember. I've been writing poetry since early childhood, and that's always been one of the primary ways that I process events and feelings. In elementary school, I was sure that what I was going to be when I grew up was a poet. I even told my parents, I wouldn't need to go to college because you don't need a degree to be a poet. So my father promptly pointed out that while that was true, it was equally true that there really are no paychecks in poetry. Nevertheless, I did go on to earn a Master of Fine Arts in Creative Writing. Long before that, though, I was 19 years old when I took my first poetry writing class in college. My professor came up with all kinds of great writing prompts for us in every class session, and I always looked forward to what we would do the next time. So one day, she asked us to think about someone who had hurt us. I imagine each of us can call someone to mind pretty quickly, right? Did someone just pop into your head? Often it is either the person who has hurt you most recently or the person who has hurt you most deeply. In my case, at 19 years of age, I immediately thought of the person I felt most wounded by at that time in my life. Let's call him Joe. We're going to protect the innocent here by changing his name. He was the high school sweetheart who broke up with me in a letter that arrived on Christmas Eve during my freshman year of college. True story. It was about a year and a half before this poetry class that I'm talking about. To make matters even worse, I had just moved from Minnesota, where I'd been in college, back to West Germany to live with my family on the military base where my father was stationed at the time, partly to be near Joe. So, back to class, and that's the memory that I've chosen to write about. Our instructions were to write about the person and about how they had hurt us. I poured my heart into that poem, all the questions I had had at the time of the breakup, all the betrayal I had felt, all the anger. I remembered that I had run into Joe about 6 months or so after he ended our relationship in a restaurant, and I was so upset that I actually felt queasy just seeing him. It was a deep, deep hurt, and clearly one that a year and a half later I had not let go of yet. Imagine writing out your own story of whoever popped into your head a minute ago when I asked about who has hurt you. Imagine the catharsis of pouring all of that onto paper. It felt pretty good. I got to have my say in a way that I hadn't in real life. Can you capture some of that feeling about your own past hurt? How good it would feel to get to say everything you wanted to say about that person. So I did that. And then the professor said, "Now, I want you to write that same story, but from the other person's point of view." I was like, what? I felt just as nauseous as I had the last time I saw Joe. I'm pretty sure that all the color left my face, and I am positive that I was not alone among my classmates in feeling shocked at the sudden reversal of our assignment. I felt tricked. I thought, if I had known she was going to do that, I would have picked a different person. I don't want to have to represent Joe's point of view. It's not fair. Last week, Howell described a Peanuts cartoon strip in which Lucy, convinced by Linus that she should apologize to their mother for her bad behavior, practiced her speech and then cried out, "I'd rather die." Well, that is exactly how I felt when that professor asked me to rewrite my poem from Joe's point of view. I'd rather die. Rather die than dig deeper into the pain I had already uncovered for the first half of the assignment. And maybe even more than that, I would rather die than have to give up the easy story of myself as the innocent victim in the drama, and Joe as the perpetrator of it. I liked my good guy role in the story, don't we all? And for that to continue, I had to be able to see Joe as the bad guy. In any human relationship, between individuals or small groups or whole segments of society, maybe political parties come to mind here, we tend to want to know who's the good guy and who's the bad guy. Who should we root for and who should we boo? I wonder, what do we get out of that polarization? Do we get a sense of ourselves as somehow righteous? Do we get a sense of smug superiority? Whatever it is, I believe that what we lose is much greater than any possible gain. We lose our connection, or our potential connection, to others. We might even lose some of our self-respect if we recognize that how we are behaving to maintain this good guy, bad guy drama is not covenantal, not right relationship, not in keeping with our deeply held belief as Unitarian Universalists that all people have inherent worth and dignity. When we reduce a person to the bad guy in our story, we are not honoring that person's worth and dignity. Of course, that first principle in our tradition does not say that all actions have inherent worth and dignity, but we can disapprove of an action, like a letter on Christmas Eve breaking up with somebody, without reducing the human being who committed that action to somehow less than fully human, without making them into a caricature of cruelty or even outright evil. Still, in all honesty, that was not so very clear to me on that day at age 19 in the college poetry class. I felt like Lucy. I'd rather die than make room for Joe's side of the story. But because I was always the kind of student who tried really hard to do what was asked of me, even if I really, truly, passionately did not want to, I started writing again. And do you know what? I think my poetry professor was actually a counselor in disguise. Because in order to begin writing, I had to imagine what Joe would have said if I asked him to tell me his version of our shared story. And what I came up with, actually, was not a list of lame excuses about why he broke up with me, but things I could see now in my own behavior that might have been contributing factors. Things that I imagined as I wrote the poem that he tried to handle, but just couldn't. I even imagined him feeling sadness about the end of our relationship, even though it was his choice. I'm not sure what I had been imagining that he had felt prior to this poetry exercise. Maybe some cruel sense of power, or maybe just complete indifference to me. But now, as I wrote that second poem, I was not imagining him as the villain in my own personal story, but remembering him as the young man I had loved fiercely and been genuinely loved by not all that long ago. Now, I will never know whether or not I guessed correctly in that second poem. I will never know if the reasons I came up with had anything to do with his actual reasons. But it doesn't matter. It wasn't a factual essay I was writing, it was a poem. In this poem, Joe was more of a fictional character than his actual self, though I tried my best to be faithful to the kind of person I knew him to be. What did matter was that I could see how I was not entirely the victim in this situation. How, although I did come out of it wounded, I may have contributed to that wounding, and how he too might have been hurt. Now, I am not saying this is true in all cases. You will never, for example, hear me say that a victim of any kind of abuse somehow caused that to happen or even contributed to it. You'll never hear me say that. Sometimes there really is a victim and a perpetrator. Sometimes it is that clear, that simple. But that was not the case for Joe and me. And it is not the case in most relationships between us as human beings. So in that poetry class, two important things happened. The first is that I began to see Joe as a more complex character in the drama than I had originally painted him. A person whose own feelings were not simple or free of pain. As my view of him shifted, I could begin to have some sympathy and compassion for him, even some curiosity about what his experience with me had been like for him, and what memories he might carry from our relationship and its end. As that happened, something in me, a tightness in my chest that had been there since the moment the professor told us the second half of that assignment, it eased. It let go of its grip on my heart. And so did Joe. I didn't use these words that day. I didn't say, "I forgive him." But that is, in fact, what I was beginning to do. I also, by naming and facing my own part in our shared drama, created some space to begin to forgive myself for whatever it was that I had done or not done or not said that had contributed to the pain that I, and maybe he, had experienced. Now here's what I really want to emphasize. This was a healing process, and it actually had nothing to do with Joe. Not really. I did not talk to him about it. I did not send him the poem, although some piece of my 19-year-old hurt self still kind of wanted to. But I did not need him to confirm or deny the accuracy of my imagination's version of his side of the story. I did not need him to say he was sorry, or for that matter, for him to hear me say that I was sorry. The forgiveness included him, it encompassed him, but it was for and about me. It was a gift that I was giving to myself without even realizing it at that point. I was the only one aware that this shift to forgiveness had taken place or begun to take place, and I was the one changed by it. Years later, when Joe and I reconnected on Facebook through a mutual high school classmate, I didn't even mention it to him. To this day, 25 years after the writing of that poem, he still doesn't know anything about it, and I don't imagine he ever will. He doesn't need to, because I was able to let go. That story and the pain it used to carry truly is a thing of the past, not a wound needing any further healing. So let's get back to you. Think back to the story that you remembered, if one came to mind when I began. Have you already forgiven the person involved? If you bore any responsibility for the situation, have you forgiven yourself? Have you let go? Have you released that pain so it can be part of your past instead of your present and your future? If not, if you're not there quite yet, can you now at least imagine that it might someday be possible to do so? Ever since that day in that college poetry class, I try to remember the lesson I learned there. When I am angry with someone or feeling hurt by them, because those things happen, friends, right? We will continue to be hurt and angry sometimes. But when that happens, I try to imagine, at least for a few minutes, that I am the other person. I try to view the story as it might appear through their eyes. Or, if the person is someone with whom I actually can have a real-life conversation, then I try to ask a question grounded in genuine curiosity, rather than judgment, about their perspective on the situation. Now, I am no angel. I am not perfect. It does not always work. It's not going to always work. Sometimes one or both of us is too hurt or too angry to have that respectful, curious conversation that might lead to mutual forgiveness. But I am convinced, nonetheless, that working with forgiveness as a spiritual practice is always worth a try. May we, individually and collectively, always try. And when we fail, as we sometimes will, may we be gentle with ourselves and then try again. May it be so.